Major funding for On Point is provided by Liberty Mutual for all your auto, home, life, and business insurance needs. Liberty Mutual. Responsibility. What's your policy?
From WBUR Boston, I'm Tom Ashbrook, and this is On Point. If the convention here in St. Paul got off to a storm-slowed start, it hit the gas last night. And the big star was the GOP's governor mom, or as she put it, the hockey mom, Pitbull, with lipstick. Sarah Palin seemed to tap with red-hot ease into the heart of Republican America, at least those in the convention hall. And tonight we find out if that heart belongs now to John McCain. It's been a good week for McCain. Jim Roddy from Allegheny County, Pennsylvania, spoke for many delegates when he explained why he stands behind his party's top gun.
He is the candidate with real character. And character, I think, means courage and dedication and loyalty and integrity and honesty. And that personifies John McCain.
And that's putting it calmly. You should have heard them, may have heard them roar last night. This hour On Point, Sarah Palin last night, and the life story John McCain is putting into play for the presidency. You can join the conversation. How did you like them apples, Sarah Palin style? Whatever your politics, did you see the appeal that rocked this house last night? What's the Republican message you're hearing this week? Are you moved? Moved to vote? By the life story of John McCain. Should it put him in the White House? Joining me here in St. Paul is Howard Fineman, senior Washington correspondent and columnist at Newsweek and author of the new book, The 13 American Arguments, Enduring Debates That Define and Inspire Our Country. Howard Fineman, thanks very much for being with us. Also with us, Michael Crowley, senior editor at the New Republic magazine. Michael, great to have you.
Thanks so much.
And with us from Baltimore is Robert Timberg, who has written two biographies. The Nightingale Song, which talks about John McCain and others, and John McCain, An American Odyssey. He is editor-in-chief of Proceedings, the magazine of the U.S. Naval Institute. Robert Timberg, thank you very much for being with us.
Glad to be here, Tom. Always fun.
Howard Fineman, first to you. Last night, wow. If you're a Republican, you were on your feet, at least in this hall right here. What did you think of Sarah Palin?
Wasn't a serving of red meat. That was the whole
platter buffet right on.
They absolutely loved it. This is a delegate of conservative Republicans for the most part. And these are people who loved her message, which was
equal parts pride and defiance. Pride in Republican ideals and defiance of what these people here regard as the forces around them trying to keep them down. Not just the Democrats, but the Washington establishment, quote-unquote, even though McCain has been a senator for many years, and the media. I think a lot of the biggest attacks and the most popular ones were against the so-called national media. And it rang on all levels, and they were up and cheering. And she also answered the basic question of whether she was ready for prime time. She clearly is ready for prime time. And now the real fight begins.
It rang. They roared. A lot of warm-up. Mitt Romney was there. Mike Huckabee. Rudy Giuliani, very two-fisted last night. He spoke to an energized crowd. Went after Barack Obama, and he was not the only one by any means. Tough words there. He said Barack Obama has never run a city, never run a state, never run a business, never run a military unit, never had to lead, he said, people in crisis. Let's listen.
He is the least experienced candidate for president of the United States in at least the last 100 years. Not a personal attack, a statement of fact. Barack Obama has never led anything, nothing, nada.
Hear them roar. And then plenty of sarcasm last night. Giuliani kicked it off, talking about speaking highly of Sarah Palin's credentials, saying she had, again, more executive experience than Barack Obama and Joe Biden combined. You also got the crowd laughing here.
She's been a mayor. I love that. I'm sorry that Barack Obama feels that her hometown isn't cosmopolitan enough. That it's not flashy enough. Maybe they cling to religion there.
I'm sorry, Barack. And then last night at the XL Center, Sarah Palin picking up on that theme, reiterating she is not a member of Washington's political inner circle.
Well,
I'm not a member of the permanent political establishment. Quickly these last few days that if you're not a member in good standing of the Washington elite, then some in the media consider a candidate unqualified for that reason alone. But
Sarah Palin last night in the crowd, ready to roll with her when she took on the political elite. The media, Michael Crowley, she came out of nowhere for most Americans. Last night, large and in charge, at least on that stage. It's a very limited perspective we've had on this Alaska governor so far. What did you make of Sarah Palin, Michael?
Well, you're exactly right. It's a limited perspective, and it's hard when we're up close in the hall, surrounded by the cheering throngs, trying to judge what the political effect of these speeches is. So I would say that having been there, I was amazed at how good she was. Howard's absolutely right. She showed that she's ready for prime time and the big stage, which I think was a key bar for her to clear. The question is, you know, did the average voter who tuned in last night want to hear about, you know, the elite media? Is that really what they're most concerned about? In the hall, they absolutely love that stuff. It's clear the Republicans are trying to initiate sort of the old culture war that they fight so repeatedly. But the fact is that it's not clear whether that speaks to the concerns of the voters they need to win over. People who are really worried about the economy, believe the war in Iraq was a disaster, worried about America's standing in the world. And whipping up the base is probably not going to be sufficient for John McCain to win this year, because the Republican base has shrunk. More voters are identifying themselves as Democrats. So it's really essential that they get some traction in the middle. And so my question is, although I grant that she gave a spectacular performance, the question is, was that red meat that got the crowd so excited in the hall, was that what voters sitting in their living rooms at home who maybe are sweating about their mortgages, is that what they wanted to hear? And I can't tell you that I know the answer. If I did, I'd be making millions as a political consultant, but that's what we'll find out.
Robert Timberg, I want to ask you there, but Sarah Palin herself, no fear of sarcasm, no fear, period, last night. Here she takes a sweep at Barack Obama's past, his work as a community organizer, touting her own experience as a mayor instead.
I guess a small town mayor is sort of like a community organizer, except that you have actual responsibilities.
Robert Timberg, you're not in the hall, though by television, in a way, the whole country is. How did it look from Baltimore looking on last night, Bob?
It looked, I thought she gave one of the best political speeches I've ever seen. Not necessarily one of the most statesmanlike. For example, Rudy Giuliani talks about Barack Obama says her hometown is not cosmopolitan enough, not flashy enough. I don't think he said anything of the sort. I think that's absolutely not true. Secondly, although I found her incredibly appealing, almost as appealing as her cute little daughter, who is maybe the cutest little girl in the world, other than my
her cute little daughter, slicking down the baby's hair with her tongue-licked hand there.
But I found it discomforting that she didn't attack or didn't challenge Barack Obama on issues. She resorted to belittling him and to ridicule, and that's not the kind of thing that I recall from anything I know about John McCain. John McCain has always been a guy who's gone out there and won and has not, you know, gone around trying to pound the other person into the ground. And the other thing, finally, it's something that drives me crazy since I spent 33 years as a newspaper reporter and have both two sons in the business. I absolutely, you know, abhor this using the press as a scapegoat. I know too many people who have gone out and challenged bullets, challenged, you know, killers, challenged terrorists, and this broad brush attack on the press, especially when you think about the fact that John McCain, perhaps more than any other senator, has had an exceptionally good and favorable relationship with the press. So, you know, as I say, it was a great red meat speech, and she seemed very appealing in many ways, and she seemed to me, very unappealing in other ways.
Belittling, plenty of that. Some touch on the issues. Let's listen here. She took a punch at Barack Obama and his perceived celebrity status.
When the cloud of rhetoric has passed, when the roar of the crowd fades away, when the stadium lights go out, and those styrofoam Greek columns are hauled back to some studio lot. When that happens, what exactly is our opponent's plan?
And then a little ridicule and a little punch on the issues.
What does he actually seek to accomplish after he's done turning back the waters and healing the planet? The answer is to make government bigger and take more of your money and give you more orders from Washington and to reduce the strength of America in a dangerous world.
Sarah Palin last night, Howard Feinman, we just got a few seconds before the break, but boy, they ate that up in that hall.
They ate up everything that she said in that hall. Because there was the core of the conservative Republican philosophy as she enunciated it. Rick Davis, the head of the Obama campaign and who's running this convention, says this convention is not about issues. It's about character. And that was on display last night. They didn't talk about the economy. They didn't talk about their plans for the economy. They didn't talk about the kitchen table issues of those people in Western Pennsylvania. They're running a character-based, culture-based campaign.
I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point live from St. Paul, Minnesota, and the Republican National Convention. Sarah Palin on last night. The Republican message on all this week. We're talking about all that and the life story that John McCain is putting into play for the presidency this hour. Howard Feinman joins us. His new book is The 13 American Arguments. He's senior Washington correspondent and columnist at Newsweek. Michael Crowley, senior editor at The New Republic, is here. And Robert Timberg is with us, John McCain biographer, now editor-in-chief of Proceedings, the magazine of the U.S. Naval Institute, a 1964 graduate, John McCain also was a graduate of the U.S. Naval Academy, served in the Marines, Robert Timberg did, in Vietnam, was badly wounded there, is author of The Nightingale Song, great book, and John McCain, An American Odyssey. Nightingale Song talks about McCain, Bug McFarlane, Oliver North, John Poindexter, and James Webb, now Senator James Webb. Of course, Mike Huckabee was up there as well last night, praising John McCain for his service to America and telling the story that we've all heard. Here is again from Mike Huckabee about his days in Vietnam, his time as a POW.
He was shot down and captured, brutally tortured. He could have eased his own pain, even cut short his imprisonment, just by uttering a few simple words renouncing his country. But then, as now, John McCain put his country first. And he knew that to return with honor later was better than to return without it now.
It's the story that's been told again and again for all of John McCain's political life, and that, along with wife Cindy McCain's beer distributorship fortune, money has really worked for him. Let's go to John in Augusta, Georgia. John, you're on the air.
Yes, hello, Tom.
Hi.
I love your show.
Thank you.
Yes, I just want to hit on two quick points. The first thing is that, you know, I'm somewhat of an independent. You know, I don't, you know, go down the traditional party lines. But I was looking to see more of the difference between John McCain emphasized than what is the difference between him and the traditional Republicans. And one of the biggest qualms I have is that, you know, if John McCain does get elected to be our president, how is he going to stand up to the big Republican machine that railroaded over George W. Bush, who pushed his agenda of so-called compassionate conservatism that we don't see anything of or hear anything of now? And I believe that two of his main policies that he campaigns on are not going to be implemented. Number one is energy policy about clean coal technology and investing in nuclear energy. How is he going to stand up to the big oil company that's helping him campaign to progress, that's just putting plenty of money into his campaign? And then the second thing is that the war in Iraq, where he talks that Bush is touting as a victory, when actually we're actually paying the loyalists to Muqtada al-Sadr to not to fight us at this time. What happens when we stop paying them?
John, I think we've got the nut of it. If John McCain wins, what does he do with the kind of Republican machine, sort of mainstream, old school maybe? We've heard from some of it this week. Howard Fineman sat at this table in the Excel Center and heard drafters of the GOP platform say it's their platform, not John McCain's, and they're going to be the ones calling the shots if he's in the office. This in a way, goes to biography. You know, he's had that rebel status since since after the Keating scandal. Can he maintain that in the White House? He's sort of come to heel in recent months, in the last year or so, to the Republican base, to Republican powers. How do you see his biography, his rebel kind of history, the maverick business, playing out if he gets the White House?
Well, just briefly, if you're in the hall, and I've spent a lot of time in the hall, I defy you to find the word Republican on a placard or a poster anywhere there. You can't tell inside the hall that this is a, quote, Republican convention.
But open your ears for 2 seconds.
Open your ears for, that's right. And I think by picking Sarah Palin, who may be a maverick by temperament, he's gone to the core of Bush-era Republican thinking. So he's
gone to the core, meaning the opposition to it, or
no. Philosophically, in terms of the issues, whatever her maverick status in attacking the Republican state chairman of Alaska might be,
right?
But in terms of philosophy, she is pure petri dish modern Bush era Republican.
I even thought you could kind of hear some George Bush being channeled last.
Sure. Well, the speech was written in part by a Bush speechwriter, and so forth.
Yep.
But on a larger basis, if McCain manages to make it to the White House, he's going to need all the Republican support he can get. He's not going to basically, I don't think, be dealing with Democrats as the starting point for whatever working majorities he's going to have in the Congress are. He's going to have to start with the Republicans.
As close as he came to working with them, and maybe even joining them at one point in his political history. Robert Timberg, watching, listening from Baltimore. What about John's question? I'm sure it's one on many minds, even Republican minds, those who want to see a turn and maybe those who don't. If, you know, famed maverick John McCain takes the White House, is he an instrument of the Republican Party, some portion of the Republican Party? Is he his own man in the White House? If you look back at his history, how do you triangulate toward a potential McCain administration and how it would come together there, Bob?
I don't for a moment think that the Republican establishment is going to control a John McCain presidency. John McCain, whatever else he may be, is one very, very tough cookie, and you don't push him around. As somebody said last night, you know, he doesn't look for trouble, but he doesn't run from it either. So I don't see that as a particularly compelling issue. I do think, though, that Howard makes a very good point, and if I could just
yes, please,
add to that, the whole question of, you know, he has actually turned this campaign into a Republican, conservative, almost in some ways, fundamentalist campaign. This, in other words, he is now running as the champion of those that always disliked him.
But isn't that what our isn't that what
I'm
our caller from Augusta is asking about? I'm sorry to interrupt, Bob, Robert, but isn't that, I mean, John in Augusta, Georgia says, if he gets in there, will he be a tool of those who have always distrusted him, or will he continue the alliance that he appears to have made for political reasons anybody could understand in his attempt to get the White House?
I don't think there's any chance in the world that John McCain is going to be a tool of anybody if he gets to the White House. But I have the very fact that he has chosen this strategy, and Sarah Palin is the single clearest embodiment of that strategy, I don't know that he does it. His strength has always been as a moderate, as somebody who could reach across the aisle, as somebody who could appeal to moderate Democrats, moderate Republicans, and to independents. And I think he may very well have essentially scuttled that prospect by the choice of Sarah Palin.
Michael Crowley, how about it? Can he be the maverick independent guy who goes against the Republican mainstream and have their support, maybe in the last moments in this convention, then get to the White House, and as Robert Timberg says, as he's demonstrated in his biography, be his own man there? Is that inevitable, given the way he's campaigning to get
in? No, I have a slightly different perspective on it. I mean, there are portions of his career that would suggest that he would stand up and be a maverick. But if you look at the recent history of this campaign, he has, in fact, kowtowed to the party machine in very substantial ways. I mean, his 2000 presidential campaign was in large part based on his opposition to large tax cuts for the wealthiest Americans that would throw us into deficits. He is now George Bush's tax cuts. He voted against the 2001-2003 tax cuts, which were basically the key domestic policy votes in the Bush years. He is now completely reversed on that position and said that he supports extending the tax cuts. And just to take one other example, look at immigration. He presented himself as making a principled stand for sort of an enlightened, bipartisan approach to immigration, which would allow a possibility for amnesty. When it became clear that the Republican base would not accept that, he basically said, never mind, and I'm going to do what you want me to. And I would just, it looks to me as though this maverick has met his match in the Republican establishment in the 2008 presidential campaign. He looks to me like a guy willing to compromise to please it.
Howard?
Just quickly, I think he may have rejected one establishment, but he embraced the other. He may still have, by his nature, antagonism toward the sort of old country club republicanism of the old days. But by picking Palin, he embraced the new establishment, which is the Karl Rove, George Bush, southern-based establishment that got Bush elected twice, and that McCain is now putting himself on as a crown on. That's what he's doing, and that's who's running his campaign. It's not just Rick Davis now. It's also Charlie Black and all these other people who have ties to that Bush era.
Let's get a call from Robert in Hartford, Connecticut. Robert, you're on the air to St. Paul.
Hi. This is a real pleasure to be on. I have so many things I want to say now after listening to you guys. The main thing I was calling about, though, is I am a evangelical Christian myself, and my wife and I were really curious to see what Sarah Palin had to see last night. And our biggest impression was she sounded just really, really hateful. We were surprised she didn't talk about what their ticket was going to do or anything. She really spent her whole time mocking Barack Obama personally, questioning his patriotism. And we thought that was a little disturbing. And then also I wanted to throw in, I'm a educator, and she was talking about her commitment to special needs programs, and it made me curious. And I looked at her record in Alaska, and from what I can see, she cut the budget more than in half. She cut it by something like 60% for special needs programs. So, you know, in looking at things last night, I was really wondering, you know, how that could be considered a net positive, you know, the way she attacks so relentlessly and so personally.
Robert in Hartford, you know, we've got it. Let me take it to Robert Timberg in Baltimore. Robert Timberg, I really want to come back to you on this. Here's an evangelical calling in from Connecticut, finding, no one could miss the strength of the presentation that she made last night, but he finds something hateful in it. You mentioned earlier what you found belittling or ridiculing and cited that as at odds with the way John McCain sees the world. It hasn't been so unfamiliar in the White House in the last 8 or 4 years. Dick Cheney has been pretty tough in there. Here again, if he gets the White House, do you think he'd bring Sarah Palin kind of off of that stump, or would that be the tone of a McCain White House?
I can't imagine it would be the tone of a McCain White House. I mean, John McCain is in many ways a happy warrior. And, you know, as Michael noted, the McCain that we've seen in the last few months, a John McCain questioning Barack Obama's patriotism. I mean, I never thought I'd hear something like that from John McCain. But this is a political campaign, and you know, things are being done that people think are going to give them an advantage, and they may be right and they may be wrong. I think Peggy Noonan, the Wall Street Journal columnist and former Reagan aide, you know, said that whatever else happens here with Sarah Palin, she's not going to be a wash. She's not going to be the vice presidential candidate that essentially has no effect on the success or failure of the ticket. I mean, she is going to be a major element in whether they win or lose.
And last night, at least in this hall, Well, these Republicans sure wanted to see her as a winner. Who knows how that will play out? Let's listen to a little more of Sarah Palin there, and then I want to hear from Howard and Michael Crowley with me here. But here's Sarah Palin going after Barack Obama on comments he made about small-town Americans at a fundraiser in California in April.
I might add that in small towns, we don't quite know what to make of a candidate who lavishes praise on working people when they're listening, and then talks about how bitterly they cling to their religion and guns when those people aren't listening. Now, we tend to prefer candidates who don't talk about us one way in Scranton and another way in San Francisco.
Sarah Palin last night, Michael Crowley, you know, putting the stick in there. But there are a lot of small-town Americans, no doubt many of them watching last night. Barack Obama, you know, was quoted out of that cocktail party or fundraiser in San Francisco. You know, it may not be John McCain's uplifting tone, but hasn't that been proven to work, too, this tone?
Well, no, I think it has. And what's happening here is so interesting because the Republican Party has perfected the art of ridicule and mockery. I mean, if you look back at the last several presidential elections, it's a club they've wielded incredibly effectively at Democrats. Think about the ads with John Kerry on the windsurfer playing the Danube waltz. Some of the ads they ran against Al Gore, sort of ridiculing him as a political chameleon. Republicans do mean humor better than Democrats, and to some extent, the convention last night was sort of an extended stand-up comedy routine. But what's interesting is that is not John McCain. I mean, I would encourage your listeners to pick up one of his books. He's written a bunch of books mm-hmm. with his speechwriter, Mark Salter. They were mm-hmm. all bestsellers. Mm-hmm. They're written in this kind of grandiloquent, high Americana tone. It's almost kitsch. And McCain constantly talks about elevating our political debate, treating your opponents with respect. And that seems to have gone completely out the window. I don't dispute that it's effective. I just think it's another example of the way the process has essentially changed McCain's approach to politics in a way that I think a lot of his admirers find disappointing.
Howard Fineman?
Well, I think they pretty much concluded that they can't win the election on the economy. Mm-hmm. I mean, you haven't heard anything here. It's as if the economy doesn't even exist, as if the conditions that most average Americans who are worried about paying their mortgage and have two jobs and have health care bills and so on, all the nitty-gritty that even Barack Obama was having trouble coming to grips with because he was too fascinated by his own campaign, finally, in his acceptance speech, tried to lay out some kind of direct agenda for the people that I grew up with, I personally grew up with in Western Pennsylvania. Those are the people going to decide the election. What these people here are doing is the classic cultural campaign and character campaign, that we're the real Americans, we represent real America, you can't trust them with the capital T because they're foreign somehow, they don't understand you. You can't believe their promises about the economy or anything else because they are not you. And this is something that the Republicans have run basically since 1968. I mean, this goes back to the era of Richard Nixon.
But this is a country headed toward majority-minority, we just heard last week.
Well, I know, but it's about turnout, and it's about getting out your base. Yes, it's about those undecided voters in the middle, but one thing Sarah Palin is going to do, everybody says, well, the Republicans are already maxed out with McCain, that they already had 88% support. This is going to make it 94%, and it's going to get money and volunteers and energy out there, and they're going to basically rerun the Bush campaigns of 2000 and 2004, even if they claim they're not. That's what they're doing.
Maybe the economy's missing, but you get this very positive kind of tone in that hall, as opposed to the complaints and criticism. Of course, the Democrats have to mount as the challenging party last week.
Exactly.
Some Americans, no doubt, will go for that.
Right.
Listeners, you can join the conversation. What is the message you're hearing from the GOP this week, and what about the message in the John McCain biography? I'm Tom Ashbrook in St. Paul. This is On Point. I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point, live from St. Paul, Minnesota, and the Republican National Convention. We're talking about Sarah Palin last night, the Republican message this week, and the life story John McCain is putting into play for the presidency. We're joined by Robert Timberg, McCain biography, author of John McCain, An American Odyssey, and The Nightingale's Song. You can read an excerpt of those at our website, onpointradio.org. Really good books. Also by Howard Feinman. His new book is The 13 American Arguments. He's with Newsweek magazine. Michael Crowley is here from The New Republic. Here from 1967, John McCain, of course, then Navy pilot, flying bombing missions over Hanoi. His plane was shot down. He was captured by the North Vietnamese, kept as a prisoner of war for 5.5 years. Here's McCain speaking from a hospital bed in 1967. Scratchy tape, but listen, shortly after his capture.
What's your name?
McCain.
How old are you?
31.
In which school were you educated, or any university?
The Naval Academy.
What is your rank in the Army?
Lieutenant Commander in the Navy.
And your official number?
624787.
John McCain, captive in North Vietnam, and it got a lot worse from there. This week, here's Delegate Neil Breitbarth from Fairmont, Minnesota, telling us that John McCain's personal story will make a difference in this election.
He is a war hero. I mean, I know people are getting, some people are saying, well, we're tired of hearing about that. But that's a real life experience for him. And I think it changed his whole perspective on how he looks at life and how he looks at country.
Democrats tried to preempt some of that in remarks last week during the DNC at the big stadium night in Vesco Field. New Mexico Governor Bill Richardson went on the offensive against that part of the John McCain story.
John McCain served his country in war. We honor his service, but that doesn't mean we have to make him president.
Robert Timberg in Baltimore, you've been watching this campaign. Last summer it looked flat on its back. John McCain, as he has many times, come back strong. He's now the official nominee. What do you see? Let's first just take the Vietnam experience, the POW experience. It's got a lot of attention this week. How do you see that driving him still today? How do you imagine that would drive, push, motivate him as president?
I think it's important in terms of the fact that, as I said earlier, he's not going to be pushed around if he makes it to the White House. On the other side of the coin, it can be that experience can be, you know, overshadow the fact that he was released from prison in 1973, which by my reckoning makes it 35 years ago.
Yep.
And he hasn't been a blank slate since that time. He's learned a lot. He's thought a lot. He's, you know, educated himself a lot. So, you know, that has to be considered as well. There's no question that John McCain has displayed extraordinary heroism and extraordinary character. At this, and that those things will in many ways come into play if he makes it to the White House. On the other hand, that the fact that he was a heroic POW does not mean that he should be president of the United States. Nobody becomes president because you feel, you know, it's owed to them, and I don't think John McCain would suggest that for a moment either.
Howard,
but it's also interesting. If I could just note,
yes, please,
here, because we're about almost 45 minutes into this show, that I don't believe I've heard, and as I didn't hear last night, virtually anything about Iraq or Afghanistan. And just 2 years ago, in the off-year election of 2006, I mean, that was a referendum on Iraq, and, you know, the House and Senate changed hands. It was a political earthquake. And we still have people over there. We still have people dying. We have some successes, some failures. But no one's talking about it, except, I guess, the family and friends of those who were over there fighting and dying.
Howard Feinman, I want to go right there. John McCain's military history is on big display by the Republican program this week. Same time, there's the war in Iraq. He was for the surge. The surge appears to have gone better than many expected, fairly well. Does the combination of his military background and this immediate facts of the surge, who knows how it will ultimately turn out, but do those immunize John McCain on Iraq or not?
Well, I think they help a lot. And you have heard, you haven't heard about Iraq that much, but you have heard about the surge a lot. One of the main pieces of evidence for John McCain's ability to be commander-in-chief in the Republican telling, in the McCain camp's telling, is the fact that he was brave enough politically to stand up and support the surge which by most accounts, even Democratic ones, has worked to some extent. And that has been a major selling point here. But I think you haven't heard that much more about it overall, because if you look closely, the difference right now between McCain and Obama on Iraq and Afghanistan is not as large as some of the rhetoric would lead you to believe.
Sarah Palin was portraying Obama last night as wanting to sort of surrender.
Victory. The key word is the V word here. Mm-hmm. The Republicans are trying to say, no, we're for victory, they're for defeat. But in terms of what they actually want to do, I don't think there's as much difference. I think a lot of the, if there is such a thing as an establishment, is pretty sure on what they want to do, which is to draw down the troops from Iraq as fast as possible and focus on Afghanistan and elsewhere. That's sort of the policy consensus that's behind a lot of the campaign rhetoric here.
Michael Crowley, then flash forward, because as Robert Timberg says, that POW moment was a long time ago. 1973 release, that's 35 years. When you look at McCain's positions on the issues, and he's been out front, and he has been in opposition to the Republican Party at significant points in his career, I keep coming back to this question of the program you see him bringing into the White House. There's a platform here, but we've heard it described by Republicans themselves this week as almost in tension with John McCain, and it is on specific points. It's not what he wants promoted on abortion. It's not what he wants promoted on immigration. It's not what he wants supported on taxes. When you look at his legislative record as a U.S. senator and a potential McCain administration, you know, what's the trajectory? Does it come out of what we saw when he was kind of rebelling against some of the Republican mainstream push, or does it conform?
Well, Tom, that's the key question right now, and it's impossible to answer. McCain's career has been sort of a big zigzag. I mean, he was a Goldwater Republican. Around the time he ran for president in 2000, he was something approaching a centrist Democrat. The New Republic ran a cover that caused a little bit of a commotion at the time of the 2000 New Hampshire primary. This man is not a Republican. He flirted with changing parties. People don't talk about this anymore. He met with Democratic leaders in 2001 to discuss the possibility of changing parties, entertained a conversations with John Kerry about running on his ticket. Now, they dispute how interested he was, but he didn't hang up on Kerry and curse him out, it sounds like. Mm-hmm. And now he's tacked back to Bush conservatism. So trying to predict how he will perform in office is actually very difficult. What Howard said struck me, though. He's kind of cast his lot with this sort of Bush Republican idea of politics. For this campaign. But it is not really what Sarah Palin represents, a intense social conservatism and interest in, mm-hmm. for instance, abortion as a key defining issue in American politics that McCain
teaching
himself...
creationism.
Exactly.
And
these abstinence. Are not issues that have animated McCain over the years. What animates McCain is American strength and power and foreign policy and the military and honor in politics and government. And I think that the lines that were whipping up the crowd in this hall last night really don't speak to what has defined McCain in the last many years. And so for me, it's a mystery. I can't predict. I find that he's casting about trying to find a winning political formula, and what he would do in office, to me, is actually somewhat of a mystery.
Howard, this tension seems to me to be central, critical, the tension between a lot of his biography and what we're seeing in this campaign, if you see it that way. I'm feeling it that way to some extent, and how that would resolve in a McCain White House.
Well, I think all you need to know about McCain is that I think this is correct. I think he was toggling. He wanted to pick Joe Lieberman as his running mate. But was prevented from doing that essentially by this new evangelical, if you will, to use the shorthand, establishment.
So if you do that, you're toast.
You're toast. It was 17 delegations would walk out or whatever. But the fact that McCain could simultaneously sort of, although Palin came in late, the fact that he was sort of simultaneously considering Joe Lieberman, mm-hmm. and Sarah Palin.
There's the tension.
That shows that McCain will pick up any tool in combat that he can get his hands on. McCain is not a systems thinker. McCain is a survivalist. He survived in the prison camp. He survived when he fell out of the sky into that lake. And I've been to Hanoi with McCain and mm-hmm. seen that spot. Mm-hmm. He's a survivor, and he will use whatever tool he can find to make it happen. If he becomes president, it's going to be a floating crap game of alliances, one day with the Democrats, one day with the Republicans. Often he's going to be alone because he's in an odd way, he's a gregarious loner also.
And a gambler.
And a gambler. You know, I was talking to Charlie Black, one of his chief advisors, the other day, and we were talking about the old game show, Let's Make a Deal, you know. They're curtains. You know what's behind one curtain. You don't know what's behind the other curtain. McCain will almost always pick the curtain that he doesn't know what's behind. You know, that's the way he is.
The Sarah Palin.
And that's the way it is. That's the way he is.
Let's go to Sarah, Sonia in Boston. Hi, Sonia. You're on the air to St. Paul.
Hi. Thank you for taking my call. I had a couple comments to make. One with regard to Sarah Palin's speech, and then a couple to address some of the comments made by your guest speakers today.
Yes, please.
I'm an independent, and I've voted on both sides over the years, and I don't consider myself to hold any allegiance to any party line. I think that Sarah Palin's speech last night was spot on. I thought that she did what she needed to do, given the climate over the last week. I think she introduced herself personally. I think she held her record up, and we can move from there and start to examine it in great detail, which is where we should be focusing our interest. So I think she did a great job. She's obviously, as someone said earlier, ready for prime time. The couple of comments that I wanted to make, one of our guests earlier had said that she was inappropriate, and others may have been so in their direct comments about the media over the past week. And in the same breath, the guest said that he thought she was cute, like a little daughter up on the stage. And
I thought Howard said that too, Sonia, but what he actually said was her little daughter. I didn't mention her
at all.
It was me.
I said her little daughter was really cute.
Yeah, but Sonia, I want to get your point. Please go on.
So my point is that over the past week, the media has been focusing on issues pertaining to the candidate as a woman rather than the candidate as a candidate, saying that she should be staying at home and taking care of her family and questioning her motives. And I think that for Sarah Palin to address the media and say, you know, in what I took from it was she was saying, you know, let's move on, let's focus on the issues, I think was appropriate in response to the way she has sort of had some criticism over the past week. So that's point number one. And hopefully we can all move on from this and the media can focus on the true issues, which is how is she going to be as a candidate, not as
a Sonia, are you suggesting that all you've read about has been the press questioning the fact that she's a woman and a mother? You're not reading a lot of stories. I mean, I defy you to go to the Boston Globe or the New York Times or the Washington Post or virtually any newspaper anywhere in this country and see if that's all you're going to find.
Well, I didn't say that.
Because that's what you're saying.
It shouldn't be even one part of what is being put out there. So, well, that was my point number one.
Reporters report what people are saying. That's what they do. If somebody withstanding, like a major politician, says this is an issue, reporters do not have the luxury of saying, shove it, we're not going to deal with that.
Give us your second point and we'll take it on as well. What do you say?
The second point was that she was merely attacking Barack Obama's character or his qualifications, and I would say in response to that, she was only responding to criticisms that have been leveled at her over the past week in terms of her qualifications as being a mayor.
Sonia, we've got it. Let us pick it up. We'll come to that. Let me get one more. We got Chris in Stoneham, Massachusetts. Chris, you're on the air.
Hi. I wanted to throw out to the collective wisdom there, my layperson's speculation that Sarah Palin was chosen, or the speech was set up in such a way that to set up her and McCain as a sort of good cop, bad cop. In other words, I mean, she clearly, came on pretty strong, pretty negative. I mean, when she likened herself to a pit bull, I mean, it seemed like a fair amount of relish there. And that sets up the situation for McCain to come in and act more like what your commentators and very knowledgeable people say is more like what McCain's been over the years, you know?
The noble fight.
Yeah, exactly. And so now he's sort of, and then of course the other obvious point is that, Sarah Palin satisfies the people who have been shaky about him all along,
Chris, our time is short, forgive me, but I want to take that to Michael Crowley. I mean, Sonia says, hey, she came in, she did the necessary, cleared the air, established that she can hold that platform, that national platform. Now they're ready to rumble. You know, maybe that's a vice president's job in a campaign in the last on the home stretch.
Traditionally, vice president's candidates do play the role of pit bull. I was surprised at how negative she went, actually, because I thought she was going to spend more time defending herself. I'm very struck, though, by the amount of pushback you're hearing, accusations that the press has been questioning her role as a mother, been sexist. And I will just say, because I know we don't have a lot of time, but it's an echo of Barack Obama versus Hillary Clinton. And I think the McCain campaign knew when they were choosing Sarah Palin that they were going to be able to play this card, that this was going to be a way that they could defend her. They would inevitably be inappropriate comments, traces of sexism in the criticism of her, and I think they've done a good job already of trying to conflate all the criticism of her under the rubric of inappropriateness defined by sexism. You saw that happening when Steve Schmidt spoke to Howie Kurtz of the Washington Post and got an entire story about this, essentially. So I think they're probably happy to hear that kind of pushback, but I think that Robert Timberg did an excellent job of saying what the reality of it is, which is that that is not really the right way to describe what's happening.
Howard Fineman, fired up crowd last night on many fronts, including drill, baby, drill, drill, baby, drill. The whole crowd chanting this when Rudy Giuliani was up there. John McCain obviously watching from backstage and then out on that stage. What do you think? We've just got a few seconds here. What do you think John McCain made of that scene last night?
Oh, I think John McCain was delighted. I think it's everything he could have imagined and more. And it does free him tonight to be the man on one last mission, to be that brave pilot leading us off into the blue skies of a great American future. He does have to be the happy warrior tonight. I thought he hasn't been. He's been the angry warrior. Now that's Sarah's role. He becomes the happy pilot.
Howard Fineman, author of 13, The 13 American Arguments. Read an excerpt at our website, onpointradio.org, and Robert Timberg's John McCain, An American Odyssey. Thanks to you both, and Michael Crowley of The New Republic. Thanks very much
Thank
for being
you.
Here.
Thank
I'm
you.
Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point.